Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org.
So good morning, everybody. So you may have noticed that we have some things are just very formal, strangely formal. But they're only useful if they help us to pay attention. Otherwise, we should just get rid of it. This practice is only useful if we use it as a tool to uproot our conditioning, our habitual response to whatever is happening. Otherwise, why come here? Why torture ourselves? But why not explore what it means to really just be with our breath and how rarely we are with our breath? At least for me. Maybe the rest of you are constantly with each moment. No problem. The wonderful poet Wendell Berry wrote a poem called How to Be a Poet to Remind Myself. He wrote, "Make a place to sit down. Sit down, be quiet. You must depend upon affection, reading, knowledge, skill. More of each than you have. They are not yours. Inspiration, work, growing older, patience. For patience joins time to eternity. Breathe with unconditional breath." I mean, let's just pause there. What would that be like? Breathe with unconditional breath, the unconditioned air. And it goes on. But to me, that line in particular, breathe with unconditional breath, the unconditioned air. What would it be like to not have to control? Or when we notice that we're not here berating ourselves, or when we're caught up with ideas about oneness, or even about meditation, or am I doing it well, or am I doing it, I'm terrible at this, or I'm great at this. It actually doesn't matter. The practice doesn't care. But it's amazing to me about how many years we probably spend considering whether I'm good at it or not good at it, or what kind of person that makes me. And for me, when the moments when we can allow ourselves to breathe an unconditional breath, meaning not in the right conditions, if I was feeling better or if I was feeling more peaceful or more equanimous or more or less angry or less resentful or less sorrowful, or always waiting for the right moment, the right conditions. And then we can breathe the unconditioned air. The air does not care. It doesn't have a lot of preferences as far as we know. Perhaps. But the air just comes in and out. And it's us that are so busy controlling, mediating with all of our conditions. So what would it be like to just participate? That's why I practice. To keep exploring, at least for this lifetime, continual investigation. Because there's no arrival. The moment you think that you're good at it, you're far away from it. At least in my experience. In one of our koan collections that we study here in the called the Book of Serenity, there's the third case or third story that we work with that I wanted to talk about. It says, the ruler of a country in eastern India invited the 27th ancestor, Prajnatara, for a mid-morning meal. The ruler asked her, why don't you read the sutras? The ancestor replied, this poor follower of the way, when breathing in does not dwell in the realm of the skandhas, and when breathing out is not caught up in many externals, always do I thus turn 100,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, That's clear. So Zen is not particularly interested in intellectual understanding. Oh, I know what mindfulness is about, or I know what emptiness is about, or I know what peace is about, and not talking about it. But Prajnatara is talking about how you embody it. But that is the true sutra, the true text, the body. Our embodiment is the text, the understanding. What we do with our actions and our thoughts and words is the true understanding. Prajnatara is, for many years, people thought it was a man. The 27th ancestor is now pretty much recognized as a woman, which is very exciting for some of us in a lineage that's mostly men. So there's Prajnatara from 27, the 27th ancestor of our lineage from Shakyamuni Buddha. And then the next woman in the lineage is actually Chodronai's teacher. Not a lot of women in the lineage. Not yet. So Prajnatara is traditionally depicted as a man, but there's lots of evidence that she was a woman, a great yogini of southern India who lived in Kerala. And it's thought in many of the stories that she had no trouble in demonstrating the true light of her practice. She just freely offered it without having to explain it. That unconditioned way. Just by how she walked across the room, cooked a meal, sat with others. According to a story about her, originally she was a homeless wife. Her husband died. And her parents died also when she was very young. And chose the homeless life, wandering. And called herself Keyura, which meant necklace. She named herself. And then one day she met Punyamitra and felt a great Dharma connection with him. She was wandering around. I remember feeling that with my teacher. Just meeting her and like, okay. A great Dharma connection. A connection that's not just about what you like and dislike, which is so boring. It is. And with her work with Punyamitra, he renamed her Prajna Tara. Prajna meaning wisdom, and Tara being compassion. Wisdom and compassion together. So this is who this koan is about. This woman of wisdom and compassion together, realizing that when those things are together, there's no knowing. There's no value in knowing. Because wisdom, prajna, the word itself means before knowing. So if you're sitting on your cushion trying to figure stuff out, you're trying to know things. And the practice is about not knowing things. Or as we often talk about, like a beginner's mind. A fresh mind. Not trying to figure it out. And some people here who work with koans get very frustrated with that because they're always trying to figure it out. But here we value the frustration, which is kind of maybe very countercultural, maybe radically countercultural. We value really examining the frustration, because what's being frustrated is our habitual response to things. What we like, what we dislike. And that's what we want to be deeply curious about. So when she's talking about inhaling and exhaling, she's saying that there's no inside or outside. But I know we live in a culture that is so exterior-oriented, wanting to outside to fill the inside. But she calls herself this poor follower of the way. I'm a poor follower of the way. I love that. Not a great follower of the way. Not a fantastic follower of the way. But a poor one. Not so. And to be a poor follower of the way is to have really nothing. Not having to be clever. Not using meditation practice or Zen practice to try to like be another thing you have to achieve. That's misguided. And as someone who, like, really, in my early part of my practice, really was trying to achieve things and look good, I can say, like, it doesn't lead to much joy. But to be poor is to have nothing and to hold on to nothing. To be really foolish. So free. So if you're thinking, what are you doing here? It's a great question. So there's a prescription for this disease of the mind, of our preferences. Breathing in and breathing out. The medicine of the disease. To breathe in without attaching to internals, to your internal feeling and your internal story. The blah, blah, blah. They're so familiar and so repetitive. At least mine are. And breathing out without attaching to external. So really allowing yourself to, like, giving and receiving. Or we talk a lot here about Dana Paramita, which is generosity. Living generously. Which is not mowing down yourself or the world, essentially. But giving and receiving freely. So how do we practice this? Sutras, the revolving of sutras, the revolving of the sacred texts. How do you do that in Starbucks? How are you present to the homeless people in the street, to the people you may live with or your animals? People you don't know on the street. To me, when we can be present, which is the ongoing challenge, that is the revolving of all the sacred texts. When we don't see ourselves as inside or outside, when we're not so attached to our stories, freely coming and going without worrying about, like, oh, do you like me or not like me, or am I doing well or not doing well, or do I belong or not belong? Or I don't think it's just me, perhaps others. Freely coming and going. And to me, that's what's so moving about when we're sitting today. It's just about just sitting and walking, sitting and walking, and looking at how complicated we make it, how distracted we are. It's like so crazy how challenging it is. Like, there's like not much happening. But I know for many of you, lots is happening. Right? My legs hurt, or I hate this place, or why are we doing this, or whatever. What's for lunch? I wish I had more coffee or less coffee. We make it so we fill it up. And the beauty of the practice is to see that without shame or blame. See how we fill up our space with stories and opinions. there's no space. But the key is just to like just notice that. I'm like, wow, check this brain out. Mary Oliver says, everything needs it. Bone, muscles, and even, while it calls the earth its home, the soul. So the merciful, noisy machine stands in our house, working away in its lung-like voice. I hear it as I kneel before the fire, stirring with a stick of iron, letting the logs lie more loosely. You, in the upstairs room, are in your usual position, leaning on your right shoulder, which aches all day. You are breathing patiently. It is a beautiful sound. It is your life, which is so close to my own, I would not know where to drop the knife of separation. And what does this have to do with love? Except everything. Now the fire rises and offers a dozen singing deep red roses of flame. Then it settles to quietude. Or maybe gratitude. As it feeds, as we all do. As we must. Upon the invisible gift. Our purest, sweet necessity. The air. Particularly love the noisy machine standing in the house. I feel like that. So many times I feel like that. The noisy machine of my habits. Where do we allow in this invisible gift? Allow ourselves just to show up. And just letting our bullshit settle. Because it just runs like that noisy machine. So I'm just so grateful to practice together.